Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Tariq Fidal of Fidal Partners, a leading rights management, brand compliance, and royalty management software platform. So welcome, Tariq.
Thank you, Paul. Good to see you again.
Yeah, well, massive congrats on this morning's inline trading update with sales rising 10% like for like to £14.5 million. But before we sort of dig into the details, I don't suppose you could quickly remind investors of sort of the key secular growth drivers across the industry.
Absolutely. And Paul, I just want to note it's $14.5 million US dollars.
Oh, sorry. Yes, dollars. Yes, that's correct.
Because We are a US-based company and working closely in the US and in Europe. But to answer your question with regards to the secular drivers of the business, we're at a very interesting time and age. We've always focused on digital monetization and digital transformation projects. Those are key for us. And what we've done as a company is, we've been looking at all the growth that's coming from digital content creation, digital content distribution, and then really understanding what are the nuances behind those scenes. So for instance, the licensing aspect of that content creation as well as distribution has always been something we've been focused on. And so what we've done is we've picked that as our market, the digital transformation and monetization aspects, and went deep into all the different industries that have licensing and brand compliance needs within that digital license distribution. And so we service many industries, as you know. We're big in publishing, educational publishing, trade publishing, now magazine publishing through the Image Data Systems acquisition. But also in the monetization of that digital content and licensing content. So the trends that we're continuing to see is whether you're a large brand, consumer goods company, fashion company, beauty company, dealing with a lot of consumer type marketing, you're spending a boatload of money on digital content creation and digital marketing. And we're there to help you with that, whether it's to manage your content, manage the licenses associated to that content, whether it's a photography license, a model license, a placement license, etc. And then now we're also able to track that content for you in digital form so that you're always in compliance with that distribution. So you have a video that you've created. It's a 30-second short still video. It might have music. It will have voiceover. It will have actors and actresses and what have you. Top end talent, and all of those carry license agreements with them as to when and how you can use that content. But you're doing so much digital marketing that as a global brand, it might be very easy for you to forget that all this stuff is out there and is expiring. So this year, we also focused on creating a capability of tracking that content for companies on their social media channels, on their partner channels and websites, wherever they would be held liable for copyright compliance, basically, and letting them know, where that content is, which content needs to be removed, things of that nature. So we're continuing to extend our end-to-end vision, if you will, and sort of supporting large brands in multiple industries with that digitization strategy of theirs.
Yeah. And I guess also just at a sort of top level, the industry is becoming far more fragmented in terms of royalties and sort of like, you know, complex to manage. And therefore, you need sort of first class software, I guess, like Fidel's.
Absolutely. You
know, so, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, we come from a heritage of dealing with enterprise blue chip type customer base. And so when you think of our traditional customer, they're operating across multiple jurisdictions and over 50, 70, 100 countries with hundreds or thousands of users that need access to a system like ours. And so that's really the heritage of the company, is dealing with those types of complex deployments in a multinational fashion. And when you look at, for instance, what we've done just in the royalty management space, because we look at our business in terms of rights and compliance, which is, you know, what can I do? Where can I do it? You know, how effectively can I license things of that nature? But then also, is there a financial aspect to this relationship? What royalties am I owed? What royalties do I owe if I'm licensing in? And so we have a financial engine, if you will, the royalty engine in the back as well. So that royalty engine today processes 28% of the global consumer products royalties globally.
Wow, so 28%.
28%. So when you think about that market position on its own, I mean, that's a huge fact and a huge number right now. It also is a testament to the ability of the engine to scale, because, you know, as you can imagine, this 28% is comprised of tens of thousands of royalties being submitted on a quarterly basis to large licensors, et cetera. But it also presents a huge opportunity for us in that moving forward, not only can we focus on helping the licensors collect their royalties, but also helping the licensees on the other end who are actually calculating and paying those to the licensors, because many of them already run through our systems. And so that's a big focus area for us moving forward. But some other interesting stats, for instance, six of the top 35 global educational publishers are already on our platform. These are large global deployments, hundreds of millions of royalties being processed and licenses being managed through the system. Five of the top 25 global licensors, massive deployments. Nine of the top 10 consumer goods companies. So when you think of brands like Coca-Cola, Philip Morris, Pepsi, Kimberly-Clark, you know, they've now licensed and subscribed to our software so that they can really manage and track their marketing content effectively, and keep the brand safe effectively.
Yeah. Well, you've certainly got some very good blue chip giants there on your logo sheet, that's for sure. Yeah. And I guess that sort of demand picture really sort of shone through in the second half, because I was just sort of backward engineering the sort of numbers. And as I say, you did your $14.5 million for the full year. But that split sort of $5.4 million in the first half and then $9.1 million in the second half. Can you just talk through how that sort of sequential growth was generated? And, you know, sort of like it must be synonymous with the, you know, the excellence in the platform.
Yeah. So we knew we were going to be, you know, top heavy in the second half of the year. I think we, you know, we made comment of that in the at the end of the first half. Our business has more renewals in the second half. And, you know, this is just an example of the renewals coming in, but then also us being able to drive more revenue and upsell into the renewals. So not only is it sticky revenue that the renewals just keep happening, because we're in a very specific domain where companies invest in getting this right. And as long as you're doing the job for them, you know, they would stick to the solution. And so we have a very sticky revenue base effectively. Yeah. So our churn is low, revenue recurrence is high. And that was just an example of us being able to pull through not just renewals, but upsell in the renewals, as well as new customer logos. So, you know, as you know, we did the IPO in April of last year. So there's a lot of focus on getting through to the IPO in the first quarter. And then the second quarter was all about actually putting the teams in place, Q2 into Q3, whether it's the sales, more marketing spend, the inside sales teams, what we call the SDRs, who are people responsible for finding new opportunities that they hand off to a field salesperson. So we put all of those people in the systems in place, et cetera, over the course of, I would say, a 3 to 6 month period. We also hired some senior people in that sector. So we've brought in a chief revenue officer as well as a VP of growth marketing, who then hired their teams effectively as well. So as that was happening, we were also focused on ensuring that all the renewals come in. And so we went on a dual track of, one, we wanted to make sure we hit our numbers. Obviously, most of our numbers are related to the renewals. We had a team very focused on the renewal process, while we also brought in a chief revenue officer to start focusing on building demand generation and net new client logo acquisition. And so we ran them in parallel, and the end result was, we hit our numbers, obviously, and lined ourselves up really well for 2024.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that the whole team, the new hires, have really integrated well, because your recurring revenue streams now is almost 80%, isn't it?
Correct. It's close to 80%. It's a focus of ours because I think when you look at companies our size in general, let's say under the $20 million revenue mark, there's a lot of ways that companies try to go to market. Some people just go after revenue at all cost. We have made a concerted effort because we understand not all revenue is equal at the end of the day, right? And your recurring revenue is the most critical. And given the fact that our solutions are quite sticky, we have a great basis for continuing to do recurring revenue. So then the key is, once you've sold a new customer, how can you continue to give them more product, or make sure that they're using the product more effectively, so that when they're upping or renewing, you can actually have a conversation around, what more can we offer you? And so I'll give you an example. A large tobacco company is using our software. They took our rights management capabilities and started with that. And during that implementation process, we actually also showed them how they can track their marketing content, whether it's image or video, and also stay compliant in their digital marketing efforts. And so by the end of the fourth quarter, so this was about 3 months after they had started their project, they came in with a new order that was about 75% in value of the original license that they had acquired from us. And so we're doing a lot of that as well, where we're focusing on making sure the clients are going live, but then also educating them on what else we can offer them that they may not have, licensed from us initially. And we continue to build those capabilities. And so it's all focused on the recurring nature of that transaction. But we also understand that you need to drive it in a way where you're adding value to the client. And that's why they'd be willing to pay more for that relationship.
Yeah. So I guess, quite a bit of the big part of your R&D is customer-driven requirements, and you can then develop it well for a sophisticated customer and then sell it to a one to multiple model, sort of, I guess.
Yep, that's how we started, actually, with customer-driven requirements, and where we've evolved to, especially with our brand vision strategy. Brand vision is our, I would say, marketing tech stack that is dedicated to helping brands and agencies manage marketing content, manage the rights for it, and then track the distribution of that content. So it's sort of an end-to-end, market position.
How are you incorporating AI into that sort of, like, new product development cycle?
So we have quite a bit of AI already in the platform, we're adding more capabilities as we go along. So I'll give you a couple of examples. Today in our platform, you can either bulk upload content into our digital asset management system, and that content gets auto-tagged by an AI engine. And so the AI engine will just go through all of that content that's being ingested, whether it's one by one or in bulk. So you could be ingesting 10,000 images, for instance, The AI engine runs through it and says, here are all the things that I can tell are in these images. And then I'm going to auto tag them so that they're easily found by your marketing department or by your distribution partners. So that's one way where we're using AI to identify all the objects and mood of the images that are being loaded into your digital asset management system. Another use case that we use AI for is image and video matching. And so we have an AI, a proprietary AI algorithm that actually we had developed. It's been well over 8 years now, that allows us to properly identify what is in the image or in the video, and then do keyword matching against it, and then do visual comparisons of objects. And so as a user of the system, you could be, for instance, saying, I'd like to identify where this image is showing up in all the videos that I've done. So let's say I have an old logo and I want to replace it with a new logo, but I want to identify all my marketing videos that have the old logo in it. So we use our, AI matching technology to do that. So that's another area where we continue to invest heavily in AI because the matches are getting a lot more specific and a lot more precise.
So just take an example. If you're a large corporate, international, you've got lots of different image rights around it. You buy brand compliance from Fidel, etc. And then you've got lots of these large language models, all generative AI picture sort of creators, and they start taking those logos that are yours and putting it into, sort of what they create from their generative AI. Presumably, one, you can help those guys, the drinks guys, protect themselves. But equally, at some point, if the judge out in the state sort of deems it that the creators of these large language models have to pay royalties, then presumably they're going to have an enormous problem on their hands, the likes of Microsoft, Google, Facebook, anybody like this, to be able to then pay those rights. Is that sort of basically correct, or?
That is very correct. I mean, it's sort of like the wild, wild west right now, in generative AI. And it's going to be even worse, I think, for the next probably 18 to 24 months as video generative AI becomes, a lot more mature in its capabilities. Because when you think about image versus video, there's just a lot more media components inside a video stream, music, voiceover, movement, locations, etc. And so the problem here right now is, I think, different jurisdictions are reacting differently to, content that's being generated by these engines. And so there isn't specifically a case law yet that is saying this is exactly where you go and, you're violating. It's coming, but like in any revolution. But yeah, there's both an opportunity on the compliance side. So if you're a brand and you're generating content and you care about, which most large brands care about, copyright compliance, you want to make sure that the engines that you're using to actually generate marketing content, because that's going to be a huge growing area. Because obviously, when you think about it, that lowers your cost of content creation drastically. But you could also be in violation. And so there's several industry movements right now around content authenticity. What is in the content? Can you trust the content? Can it be displayed to different types of audiences depending on the distribution? And then there's also the copyright component to it. So it's quite a complex growing space. But we're one of the pillars in that space around compliance when you think about it. Right now, though, it's not very clear as to what is deemed non-compliant versus compliant, and it's very one-off. So you constantly hear of lawsuits every week in this space, whether it's from, music artists, authors. There was a class action lawsuit by authors against OpenAI that was launched a few months ago, where the engine was just able to create the next version of, the next author's novel completely. And the question is, well, if it used the first version of the novel that it learned from to create the second version, then do you not owe the author royalties, right? And so, but that's still in court right now. There's been no judgment against it. So we're at the very early stages of that, but we feel that we're very well placed to help address that, copyright content protection. In the meantime, even when you think about the traditional marketing means and methods of someone doing a photo shoot for a brand and using high-end photography or high-end talent and having to pay them, but then also end up gaining lots of very difficult usage rights associated with them. So you can only put my picture on social media for 6 months and only in these territories. If you want to put it in other territories, you have to pay more. You can only use my music for this duration. You can only use this image if I'm a photographer on social, but not in-store displays. And so brands come to us having settled copyright compliance lawsuits saying, we have no way of tracking this. We're not doing it deliberately, but we have no way of tracking it. We need to get better. And that's where we come in.
Yeah, I mean, I could see somebody like particularly user-generated content on the back of this generative. I mean, YouTube's going to have a massive issue. TikTok and Facebook. I mean, there is actually a slight test case, which is historical, not historic, in the UK, certainly. If somebody, a user, a school or anybody like this, a body, an organization wants to use music that is basically, a jingle that's been created by a song singer songwriter, then they have to pay royalties. I mean, that's just like, even if it's their own content. So it's I don't know, but let's you'll be stunned if it doesn't something similar is not put on this whole area. But anyway, so
Absolutely.
you probably have to be hiring a lot of people, I think, in the future.
I mean, to that point, we actually did end up hiring about 40 people into the company since the IPO. But not for content tracking purposes. And I want to give you an example of how effective the content tracking is before we go off to another topic.
Yeah,
But
please.
this past year, because we brought this capability into the Brand Vision platform of the ability to track video and image content on social media, on websites, on partner sites. And we did a paid service for finding 9 images and videos for one of the world's largest consumer packaged goods companies this year. And the exercise was we have these 9 images for a particular brand of ours in our grooming business, and we need to find it. We can't tell you why, but it's an association with this brand ambassador. We have to find where that content is, and we have to pull it down. And so what we didn't know was that they also gave the same exercise to their marketing agency. And so we went off and we took the images. We asked them for all of the social media sites that they want to track because they operate globally as well, et cetera. So that ended up resulting in us over a 10-hour period tracking over 250 plus sites and social media sites, et cetera, and found close to 500,000 posts across that entire universe for them in under 10 hours.
How much
Now,
did their PR agency do? Five.
the PR agency took over 3 weeks, was doing it manually, and found less than 70% of what we had found over a 3 week period, right? And billing for those 3 weeks of service. Because they actually were doing it with people, like they actually hired or they have their own teams saying, okay, you're going to go on this Instagram handle and you're going to search for this content. You're going to look at the video, and which is exactly what we fully automated, right? But this is the power of what we've built. And this was what was one of the things that we released this year. So we think we're just at the tip of the iceberg in terms of helping companies just secure their brand and secure their rights while they're actually continuing to market. And there's a lot of efficiencies also to be gained from reusing content and not having to do expensive photo shoots every single time. So once you know what your content is and you can easily find it and what your rights are, then you don't have to necessarily create new photo shoots. You can just take that content and localize it to the local markets.
Yeah, you'd have certainly thought your publishing industry and the music industry will be banging down your door there, Tarek.
Publishing is banging on the door.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not doing much in music except help. Now, this year, we're actually going to be helping the brands ensure that they are in compliance with the music that they're using in their videos. That's been a very growing trend for us. We've gotten some of the world's largest brands, I won't name them now, but you know they're 30 plus billion in revenues. Several of them are trying to solve a problem where their local brand managers in different emerging markets are changing the marketing content and putting in localized music without acquiring rights for it.
Yeah.
And then they're getting cease and desist letters from the record labels. And so the brands are coming to us and are saying, not only can you also find music in the video, because we're getting sued left and right by record labels. Yeah. And so that's going to be a big focus for us in 2024, is to also introduce the music components within video.
Brilliant. Okay, well, look forward to that. In terms of sort of like the balance sheet, I noticed you closed the this year at $3 million of net cash as at the end of December. What's the sort of cash runway going forward?
Yeah, so we're very comfortable on our cash runway for the entire year going into 2025 as well. We've done a lot of conservative modeling, I would say, based on renewals, new pipe being closed, etc. But we are very bullish on where we stand in terms of both cash and even just as importantly on EBITDA. And so we're making a very concerted effort to also get to profitability faster than what we had originally assumed. And so two things happening this year. One is spend your cash wisely, slow down on the expenses, but at the same time, increase the top line. And so those are the three goals of the company from a financial perspective, if you will. And I feel very comfortable in terms of where we are with those.
Yeah, no, I also highlight to investors, have a look at the new Cavendish note, which was published this morning, and they've got a price target of £2.60. But on the terms of the cash, they've reduced the estimated sort of cash burn for this year to, I think it's $1.5 million. So they're closing with $1.5 million at the end of next year. So that should give you ample cash to get you through to when they project, which is to be cash flow positive in 2025. Okay, brilliant. Well, you've obviously got a pretty good growth runway, that's for sure, going forward. A solid balance sheet. So putting all that together, Tarek, where are you hoping sort of to get to? I know you had some pretty ambitious goals, but are they still in place? Because obviously you've got so many secular growth drivers there behind the business.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I think of growth, I think 5 years out, and I think what can we do organically? And then what would we look to do inorganically through M&A on the long run? So I do think that organically we have a very, very long runway and very strong runway to be able to just organically gain traction in continued publishers, continued consumer products companies, continued marketing departments and large blue chip customers. And this year, in addition to all of that, we're also focusing on, as I mentioned earlier, attracting the licensees who deal with consumer products licensing and merchandising opportunities. And so the key for us is constantly organically expanding our addressable market and going after recurring revenue businesses effectively, right, that generate recurring revenue. So that's all organic. I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg there. And what I'd be interested in doing, and the board would be interested in doing on the long run, is to also look at inorganically, do we want to look at any acquisitions that increase our foothold in one or two specific industries that we've identified as growing industries, and or bring to us a technology that helps us complete our end-to-end journey, if you will, for the buyer. So what other things can we sell to the buyer that are in that same tech stack, whether we offer it today or we can offer it tomorrow, so that we can also bundle it and upsell it. So those are the things that I think will go hand in hand. Clearly, from my perspective, I'd like to see better movement in the stock market in terms of valuation, stock price, et cetera. I feel like we have all the elements for that. But before we go out and look at, other M&A type activity, I think, I'm looking for the market to really reflect the value of the company.
Yeah, I'd highlight just on that valuation, sort of, undervaluation perspective. If you run the numbers from Cavendish, I think that the current share price, the stock trades at about 1.6 times EV sales, so significantly good value for a high IPR rich sort of software firm, that's for sure. So,
I agree.
yeah,
I mean, of
good.
course, the founder's always going to tell you that I agree with that statement,
Yeah.
but I do think, I mean, right before the market downturn over the last 18 months or so, we were in that 3 to 4 EV to sales ratio. So, to me, I think there's quite a bit of growth in that valuation once the market starts coming back. Our job, as operators, if you will, is to just continue to do well with the operations, bringing in new sales, acquiring net new logos, putting more product out to market, but then also ensuring that we're doing that while we have an eye on the costs.
Okay, well, brilliant, Tariq. Thanks for those insights again, and very much looking forward to more continued double-digit like-for-like growth in the top line for 2024.
Same here. Thank you, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.